Hi, folks, and thanks for listening to this Reboot Republic podcast. Couple of quick things before we kick off. We've had an incredible few days on the Tour de Chèque, incredible few weeks, but it's been fascinating to watch the RTE2FM Keith Walsh story develop, now featuring in the Irish Independent. This was a story we broke last September, and again a couple of weeks ago on the Tour de Chèque. That podcast is available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And while we didn't get much credit for it in the mainstream media, we are happy enough that the workers are getting some sort of restitution. The reason I'm bringing it up is because it goes back to what I keep telling you. The Tour de Chèque is not just a podcast platform. It is activism. The work we do is helping workers, it's helping people in Gaza, it's helping people across Ireland, and we want to continue to be able to do it. But the only way we can keep it going is if you join us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. The link is at the very top of the podcast you're listening to right now, and it is the easiest bit of activism you can do on a monthly basis. Thanks everybody who's listening, sharing, liking, and letting their friends know where to find us. But please come on board. I'd love to see you in that little Patreon community that we have. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and delighted to be joined back on the podcast by one of the great friends of the podcast, Hugh Brennan, of the O'Coolon Co-Housing Alliance. Hugh, it's wonderful to have you back in the pod again, and I'm looking forward to a good chat about housing and what are the solutions. We've chatted lots, but it's ongoing, developing. We have a new incoming Taoiseach now, Simon Harris, who's promising to ramp up supply. So we'll have a chat and see what ideas we can give him, because in terms of what I've seen, there's nothing yet. It's not you ain't seen nothing yet. It's you're unlikely to see anything. Hugh, listen, great to have you back on.
And great to be back on. Thanks very much indeed.
Hugh, in terms of affordable housing, we saw last year's targets in terms of actual direct delivery by local authorities and housing bodies, very, very low. And we know most of those were actually bought from the market, not actually delivered directly by local authorities and housing bodies, even like commissioning private builders. They were just literally bought off plans from developers and off the market. Yeah. What's in terms of O'Coolon, what are you doing at the moment?
Okay, so we've one small job on site, 12 units out in Ballymun. Earlier in the year, we finished up the job up in Lusk, which were 51 units. There were 12 social houses and 39 affordable homes. We have 32 ready to go in Ballymun also. These are apartments for older people. So we have our credit arranged. We have the contractor ready to start. So we're very, very close to getting going there. Just a few little legal issues that, you know, are always there before we can actually just get on site. But that's ready. That's ready to go. Then on the same site, or an extension of that site, we have another 32 affordable homes. That's held up in Onboard Planála, unfortunately, over an issue of permeability. And that's the permeability between an existing estate and our new estate. And just because of the issues in Onboard Planála, that's been held up for the best part of 9 months at the moment, and it'll probably go to a year.
Right.
So that's very frustrating. Then we have another one with full planning permission also in Ballymun, where there are 34 affordable homes and 17 nice single-story assisted living apartments for older people. That could go, but there are what we call abnormal costs on that. And one of my big issues with the department is that they will absorb abnormal costs on social housing. Okay. So they have basic unit rates, if you like, which they will allow local authorities to pay for social houses in their areas, and that's listed out across the country. And they are prepared to add on something onto that for abnormal costs. They're not prepared to do that for affordable housing. So if there are abnormal costs, they have to be borne by the housing, which essentially means they have to be borne by the end user. And it's very difficult to achieve the affordability that we need to achieve in those circumstances.
And this is something like, you know, some issue with the site in terms of costs that were required beyond, you know, a normal site that would be straightforward in terms of developing, be it like, for example, I don't know, swamp or hazardous materials or something like that.
I can give you examples. I mean, like, we're working on local authority sites. This, it's important to say that as well.
Yeah.
So we're not choosing the sites, and it may very well be that the sites that are left over aren't perfect, because if they were, maybe the local authorities would have gone ahead themselves and built on them. But on this particular site, it's a link between two roads. There are services going through that which have to be diverted. For reasons of overlooking, the whole level of the site has to be dropped. And they are considerable costs. I mean, when you talk about diversion, you're diverting water, you're diverting main sewer, you're diverting ESB, and then you're diverting the other utilities as well. And then we're physically dropping the level of the site. So you're talking about muck away, as we call it. And all of that is expensive. And we are where we are basically because of government policy. And therefore I firmly believe that it is the government's or the state's responsibility to ensure the viability of these schemes, and they can do that by making grants available to cover these abnormal costs. That's what we have in Ballymun.
I just want to stick with that one for a second, and we'll come back, because I actually think it's quite important, because I was talking to a number of people about this when I was down in Trim on the weekend. And there is an issue of this whole question of, and maybe it goes beyond just the affordable housing, but like, who pays for example, you know, issues like that, be that footpaths, you know, be it lighting, be it public works, be it the water infrastructure. And kind of my looking back at this is that essentially over the last kind of 30 years, the local authorities have completely removed themselves from that public infrastructure provision.
Yeah.
And have kind of put all the costs over to housing providers, be they private developers or public, you know, housing bodies. And it's kind of skewed the whole, it's added to the cost of housing, that in actual fact, the state should be covering those things as part of housing provision.
Yeah, well, certainly on their own lands, I think they absolutely should. Especially where there may be difficulties. Like each of the sites that we got from local authorities, they all have their individual issues, and a lot of that is because, in effect, it's leftover land, if you like. You know.
Yes.
And the better sites are built on earlier, simply because it's easier to do that. So I would agree with you. I mean, you know, there is an argument there for the state coming in and preparing these sites and working along with whomever is there, whether it's a private developer or ourselves, in order to get planning permission, where the state would provide what we would call service sites, and in that instance, the local authorities then can allow smaller building contractors to come in and to build out portions of a much larger site, because the services are already there, and then it's just up to the individual builder to come in and physically build the blocks on those service sites.
You know? Yeah, and they have that model in the places like the Netherlands, is my understanding.
They had it here. It was done here in the past. In fact, in Poppentry, on our very first development, that was a service site. Now, We had to go back in and get planning permission because planning permission had lapsed. But we had already had a layout, so we knew what we were doing.
And so to make this clear, you're saying you have a site, you have planning permission. and you're ready to go. But the issue is the Department of Housing won't give you the funding to cover the additional costs of that site because of the particular site.
Yeah, and there's also another issue, and it relates specifically to us, because yes, we are an approved housing body, but we're not like any of the other approved housing bodies that we said before, because we simply don't own or manage any property. Our vision is to try to build affordable houses and, well, fully integrated houses. So we will build social houses as well, but we will pass those on or sell those on to another approved housing body. So we don't own or manage anything.
Yeah.
So we really struggle with early stage costs. And there was a report done on the delivery of social housing, which recognised this. That early stage costs should be met by the local authority or by the state. The interesting thing about meeting early stage costs is, though, that doesn't need to be a grant. That can be a loan, because all of those costs can be recouped when.
Like what? What are you talking about when you're saying early stage costs?
Like planning fees. I should say planning fees, but design team fees, okay? So your architect, your engineer, and nowadays there are so many consultants, you just would not believe it, that you have to get involved. I mean, you've got your architect, you've got your engineer, you've got architects, you've got mechanical, electrical, and civil engineers. And then very often you need to get consultants in to look at daylight and how that's impacting on the development. You need to get individual arborists to look at trees, and all of this is right. I mean, it should be done, but the ultimate development can bear the cost of those, and so that can be a loan, and that could easily, and in affordable housing, like, the way to do that, I think, is just to bring forward the affordable housing grant, because there is an affordable housing grant there which enables people to buy at an affordable level that comes through the local authority, through us, and is passed on to the end user. If that was front loaded for us, then we can use that to.
And which specific stream is that you're talking about?
That's when that's for local authority affordable housing.
So that's the local authority home purchase affordable home purchase scheme.
It is. It's the one that was developed under the Affordable Housing Act.
Yeah. So in that, how would that work then if you were to bring that forward?
So what that means is that when we go onto a site, or when we agree with the local authority that we will build on this particular site, that they make available funds for us, and it usually works out at around 4% of the net development cost. So it is substantial. So they make available those funds up front as a loan for us to pay the design team fees and all of those pre-tender costs. But they get that back at the end when the houses are sold.
Yeah. And what's been the response so far to that?
Not great. Now, at the moment, we're back and forth with them. And whereas they are prepared to release the Affordable Housing Fund in tranches, and that will certainly help us. I mean, they won't wait till the very end. We haven't gotten anywhere with absolutely front loading it yet, and we have been talking and until we are blue in the face to everybody about this, and then just to move on, just to finish that the Cúlainn picture, if you like you know, we have that very big one out in Killinarden, but you know, it was made public a good while ago that we are seeking to dispose of our interest in that to the Land Development Agency.
Yeah.
But Rory, that's taking an inordinate length of time. Like, and I spoke with the Land Development Agency and the department 7 months ago. Like, they suggested this, and it's still going on, and it's killing us. It's absolutely killing us. It's driving us mad. It's due diligence, but they're dragging it out and dragging it out. And I'm not saying they're dragging it out deliberately, but it is just being dragged out. And in the middle of a housing crisis, you know, when we have people screaming at us for housing all the time, and we have to tell them now that we can't allocate houses anymore, that's all done by local authorities. You know, the mood out there, like, simply is not good.
Yeah. It seems very frustrating. And just explain a bit about that in terms of why you had to sell your, because you were involved in developing that.
No, we were.
We weren't involved. You were leading the development of that affordable housing scheme in Killinarden. And what happened?
Yeah, we was. We were. We set up a joint venture between ourselves and CISC, and we got full planning permission on it, and we got our planning permission, and we had agreed prices before the massive inflation, or you know, we've been awarded a scheme before the massive inflation.
Yeah.
Then we had to go back and renegotiate that. But at the end of the day, Rory, it came down to a funding issue. That it's a huge job, as you can imagine. You know, it's over 200 million, and funding that for us became a big issue. And the LDA were prepared, they said, to come in and take our place, and they would build it out. And in return for that, we would be, if you like, selling our share, selling the value that we have created in that company to the LDA, and that would enable us to complete all of the rest of our jobs, to put us on a sound financial footing. You know, it was, we're preempting, you know, a possible, you know, wind down later on, like, you know, which we don't want to have.
But it is
frustrating. I mean, we shouldn't have to do that. I mean, in any sensible or, you know, reasonable situation, when you have full planning permission for 635 houses and 60% of those are affordable, you think that some people would put their heads together and say, let's just get it done.
It's mind-boggling. Like, it actually is mind-boggling that, you know, and 200 million, sure, 200 million's a, you know, a drop in the ocean. Like, we've 8 billion of a surplus. Like, what's the issue here? Why don't they want to lend to you?
Well, it's not that they don't want to lend to us.
Why won't they set up a system whereby they can?
Yeah, you would think that they would, and this is what we've been arguing for, and put it through some of the institutions that are already there. You know?
Yeah, why doesn't the Housing Finance Agency lend
because,
to you?
Because the house now, and in fairness to the Housing Finance Agency, we have been back to them, you know, again and again, and but they don't do short term finance, you know, and like we could have got finance for the overall thing, but we would have needed a substantial amount of equity to get that. Like, we could have got finance from one of the bigger banks, but we would have needed substantial amount of equity to get that, which we didn't have, but which the Land Development Agency do have. You know, so like there are a lot of issues around it, and you know, bringing the Land Development Agency in, we thought that was a good idea. It'll speed it on. It'll get. But it hasn't, you know. 7 months later, Rory, like it would put years on you, you know.
Jesus, it's utterly mind-boggling. And again, they come back to like, do they really want to fix the crisis at all? Like, do they really want to?
Well,
do they have?
The thing. You know, that is the thing. And like, I mean, and this is why. Like, you know, I've a lot of time actually in respect for Simon Harris. He's actually in my constituency, you know. So like, I've watched him growing up. You know, we used to make jokes about him when he was going to his first cabinet meeting, that his mother would call him in to tell him to put on his long trousers, you know. But he has really done well, like, you know, and like, he's such a young guy, and he has a lot of energy. But when he comes out with a statement like that he's going to build 250 houses and 1,000 houses in the next 5 years, without giving us any idea about how he's going to do it, and when we see these simple little things that could be put right, you know, like 635 houses sitting there waiting to be built, you would think that he would be coming, or that the minister would be going to him and say, you know, look, these houses are there ready, waiting to go. Why can't we get them built? But anyway, look at, I mean, that's enough of my woes. They're fundamental.
Can I make a point on that? That's why I came in for a moment. Hughes walked the walk and talked the talk, and backed it up in various other iterations, including a long-term commitment that is not just on the island of Ireland, but across the globe. So these exasperations and the clear unhappiness with you, listeners need to put that in context. This is something that you've been passionate about for decades now. And
he's actually built affordable homes.
This is my point. This is someone who's delivered it, not just in Ireland. As I said, he's been part of other groups that have helped do it elsewhere. So when you speak, it should be listened to with a lot more than just, Tony Groves is having a bit of a cut again because he's a bit mad. But no, it's really telling to hear you so exasperated. That's all I wanted to say, just for listeners' benefit.
Okay, yeah.
And it has to, sorry, go on, Hugh, go on.
Yeah, well, no, I was going to say that there are other solutions out there. And I just don't look at the housing crisis as a short-term thing. I look at it as a long-term thing, and it is a long-term thing. And I now believe it or not, Rory, when we were talking a couple of years ago, we had our first grandchild, and he was actually named Rory, as you know. And now we have four, and that's
congratulations. That's fabulous.
It is fantastic. Yeah, thanks very much. The last one is only 2 days old, Annabelle, my daughter Alice down in Wexford. So yeah, we're over.
Congratulations! Yeah. That's wonderful.
But still, you wonder what kind of a world are we leaving for our grandchildren. Yeah. And watching Philip Boucher Hayes's program recently, if we stop all of the emissions now, right now, if we stop all of them now, still the sea levels are going to rise by about 5 meters.
Yeah.
And this is, scientifically proven. This isn't just somebody's opinion. This appears to be fact. Okay. And think of the social upheaval that's going to cause, even in Ireland. Think of the coastal communities that are going to have to relocate, and what that will do. Like, if you think of the tiny amount of immigrants that are coming into Ireland, and relatively speaking, it is a tiny amount of immigrants, and think of the social upheaval that we're experiencing at the moment because of the way it's being handled, with the rise of ultra-right thinking in the country, and what impact that's going to have. I mean, I don't want to look forward to a world where my grandchildren live in this kind of, what they used to call it in the books, a dystopian future, housing is central to all of this. Housing is key. If people are being forced to move from coastal communities in the future, if we have housing ready for them, it will reduce that social upheaval. So how could we do that?
Absolutely.
The way we can do that is, instead of what you argue for, we've had our chats about this, getting the state involved in a state building company, get the state involved in manufacturing houses in factories, right? We can do this now. We have the technology.
Hugh, I said that as well. Hang on a minute. I said that as well. In my state building report last year, I had that direct recommendation. The state should also set up factories to build housing.
He's adding that in, Hugh. He never said that. fact check, no.
Well, that's what needs to be done. And I've been speaking to people all around the country, people, community housing groups come to us all around the country. We were speaking to one last weekend in Connemara, a community-led housing group for Irish speakers. Absolutely necessary. Try, if we can at all, keep the Irish speakers in the Gaeltacht where they want to live.
Yeah.
Udar Ós na Gaeltachta could easily get involved in factory-built housing, either two-dimensional or three-dimensional. The state has the land for the factories. It has the land for some of the houses, and it can get more. It has this land development agency if it wants to use it, although I'd be a little bit wary about that, as I said to you.
NAMA 0.2 is what I call them at the moment.
Well, maybe so, yeah. But the state and local authorities could get involved in having factories all around the country churning out these houses. It's done in other countries. We visited Malmo to see how they do it. We were talking to Dahi Downey last weekend. He's been over in Vienna. He's seen this happening in different parts of the world. this is what we need to do, I believe. Get the state involved in that. Get involved in forward planning. My colleague John here, you know, talks about the advanced factories that the IDA used to do. It's a similar kind of thinking. It can be done and it needs to be done. And we need to invest in research as well. We need to look at not just the timber frame, the 2D, the panels, if you like. I don't want to get too complicated, but, you know, you can have individual panels delivered to site where they're assembled on site. Or you can have the full volumetric, the full unit actually dropped in on site. And get the state and get the other political parties who are going to be in power in the next time to put this as a plank of their policy, that we will that we will build in factories, the state will build. And like, why isn't it done already, you might be saying? Like, why aren't there big conglomerates coming in? Because they don't have the order book. Okay, they can't rely on an order book. But we know that demand is here. The state has the order book, the state has the funds, the state has the land, the state can invest in the research, and the state will provide the order book. And then it can be done. And then you can have my small and medium contractors all around the country building these houses locally, and the bigger guys churning them out in high density developments where they are required. So that's my suggestion. You can take it if you want.
Well, Hugh, do you know what? It's a confluence of wonderful minds coming together is what it is, because I think it's brilliant that you've eventually come to this. Given that I was banging on about it last year, and Rob Cass will be jumping up and down because he was banging on about it as well. And no, I 100% agree with you. And I actually had an article in the Irish Times last summer specifically about it, and setting out exactly that the whole thing about it, because I was looking into it and Rob was looking into it as well. And the whole issue with I named specifically one factory in the UK that is in the midst of being developed now, that's going to build 5,000 homes. One factory, 5,000 homes.
Yeah.
If you had four of those factories, that's 20,000 homes.
Yeah.
You could set them up within 2 years.
And you can. And the technology and the knowledge is there.
Is there. And the thing about it is that, and I do think it is a role, if you did have a national building agency, it could coordinate that. And it would be set up to do that specifically. And I think the other thing it could do is what you were talking about there is all those consultants, architects, engineers, that the National Building Agency, which the previous one had, was that. You have that expertise there, that one-stop shop for development that affordable housing providers and social housing providers and could go to and say, okay, we've this development, we need these skills, will you work with us for whatever amount of time? And they do. And then, do you know what I mean? And that's their real potential, real solutions. And I completely agree with you. And like Rob's view is the view why they haven't been willing to do this is that essentially the Department of Housing and Department of Finance completely risk averse, don't want the state to be getting involved in this, don't want to be seen to do something that might fall flat on its face. And it's just this huge level of conservatism and no real appreciation of the actual emergency or what's happening or the potential either.
Yeah, but now I loads even to say this, but I mean, they can learn a little bit from Leo's regrets. Leo's one regret was that he didn't take more risk at different times. He was saying yesterday, and look, and it's not a risk. This is the whole point about it.
Exactly,
it's not a risk. Like the demand is there, and I say, look to the future. Look to what kind of demands we are going to have in the future, because if we think the paltry few immigrants that we are getting but then look at the upheaval around the world and look what's likely to happen, Rory. We have to be ready. We have to be ready for it. We should be ready for it, and we should be much more welcoming of people, because as we know, except for the Brennan family, our birth rate is in the country is declining. We're doing our bit to keep it.
And listen, in terms of, like, you know, the whole affordable housing model and idea is what like, okay, so that's a key solution in terms of delivery. Do you think that's really the key? Is there anything else you've said there as well? We need the seed funding. And that been done as a loan. Is there anything else you think needs to be done in terms of solutions?
Well, okay, we'll just list them again. The seed funding, absolutely, definitely as a loan. Looking after abnormal costs as they do for social housing developments, and stop separating social from affordable as well. I mean, let's talk about public housing on public land, and now houses coming from publicly owned factories to build public housing on public land. And if there are abnormal costs that need to be borne to make those sites ready and to make the scheme ultimately viable, the state must invest in that. I mean, they waste, honestly, Rory, they waste so much money that I think that it's, you know, and this would
go on, explain. They waste it where? I know lots of it. Go on, where? You explain for listeners. Where are they wasting it?
Well, look, I mean, the way we go about things, okay, in an unplanned approach. Like for example, if you look at HAP, for example, okay,
yeah.
Now, I think that was probably a knee-jerk reaction, but it was also to keep the private sector involved. I mean, and to keep the market.
It was a subsidy for landlords.
That's exactly what
and the banks.
So yeah, so that's a huge amount of money that's generated and
almost a billion a year.
Yeah, which I think could be better used. Okay, and that's why I say that they waste money. You know, I just also believe they waste money in terms of the way that they look at the immigration problem. Again, you look at it as a crisis. And you don't plan for it. And people are coming in and we say, we'll take over hotels and we'll pay top dollar for the hotels. We make a land development agency who can go out and buy a supposedly affordable housing, cost rental units from private developers for what I believe are exorbitant sums.
Yeah.
And without planning, you know, if you sit down and you plan it, and they say, oh, but this is an emergency. We have to do something. Yes, you have to be doing something. I agree that, but you have to start planning sometime in order to achieve where you want to go. It's basic.
And you've made this point before that, you know, people say, why are house prices so high? Because it's the expectation of the private developers that they will get big profits. And And the LDA and the state, by just buying off those developers at their expected profits, is inflating prices as well.
Yeah. And I think I said to you, and I'd probably get in trouble for saying it in a podcast, but I don't care because I'm in trouble anyway. I've been told that the LDA are expecting double-digit margins on their projects, and that's wrong. A state body, what I would consider inflating the end price because they need to get a double-digit margin. Come back and tell me that I'm wrong, please. Somebody out there, you know, in admin land or part of the
This is where the LDA is developing. So what are they developing at the moment? Cost rental, a minimal amount. This is themselves. So this is not... Yeah, because they're buying off developers, but the ones you're saying they're developing themselves, and I assume this is in the negotiations around the development that, you know, that this is where this is coming from, that they're saying, okay, the rent we're going to charge at the end, or the affordable house price we're going to charge at the end, needs to be, let's say, 1,000 a month for affordable rent, plus 15% for our margin. The affordable house.
Well, double digits, so it could be anything over 10%, you know. But
anything over 10%, right?
Yeah.
So the rent is actually going to be 1,100, or if it's a home for 100 or 200,000, it's actually going to be 220,000, and the 20,000 or the 100 euro a month of that is purely their margin that they're taking back,
and that's coming back in, and that's because they're, and this is my belief, that's coming back in because they are recognized as a commercial semi-state body. But I think that mindset is wrong.
That is all. That is like you would think. Maybe what? What did you say for you? You take 3%? Was it 2%?
No. Well, it depends on the scheme. For Killinarden, it was substantially lower than that. Was because it's a very big scheme, and we don't need it. We are a not for profit organization.
Well, yeah, I know, but you still take a margin to cover future investment and future costs.
And it needs to be there to increase your reserves. And if we had reserves, we're constantly being told, that we wouldn't have to be worrying about early stage costs because we could use our reserves for that. No, our standard margin is 5%.
Yes. Yeah.
Now it's not sufficient. We're told by the private sector, it's not sufficient for the banking sector, but they are still prepared to deal with this, in fairness.
And what would private developers normally? We hear it's between 15-25%.
Well, what we're told is that they cannot attract construction finance if their margin is less than 15%.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it needs to be a minimum of 15%.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And people need to understand this. They say, like, why are costs so high? Well, sure, if the state itself is going taking out over 10%, adding on over 10%, and the private developers are adding on over 15%, the whole argument we're still hearing, Hugh, is that we can't deliver the housing we need without the institutional investors and without the private developers.
Yeah, they're wrong there, and again, that's ideological stuff, and that's okay. That's what a certain proportion of the population vote for. Okay, a certain proportion of the population absolutely agree with that, and absolutely agree that we must look to the market, and that has been Fine Gael philosophy, if you like. For years, and that's the way they work, and they're not prepared to go away from that. But I don't believe it's the right way to progress, and an awful lot more people don't agree it's the right way to progress.
I want to make one point, Rodney. It's really important. Yeah. This week alone, Blackstone, one of the biggest purchasers, the financialization of housing, in one transaction purchased 27,000 units. 27,000 units. And because they did it in such a way as that via their model, it won't even have to be, there's no even transparency over it because it doesn't have to appear on any stock exchange. So therefore, they don't even have to go to it. And these are the type of companies that we're referring to. The financialization of housing across the globe is really pushing people into this situation whereby we're looking at this polarization. That's one of the key aspects to it. But in one transaction, 27,000 homes taken straight off the US market and into one fund, and no one is able to even peel the layers back on it because of the corporate laws it is. So yeah, we're fighting a losing battle if that's the way it's going.
And it's completely avoidable. It doesn't have to be like this. And that's why I think, we have always been in agreement, Hugh, that there is an alternative to this complete reliance on the market. And it can come in different forms. And we have had different perspectives on what that form might take. But the point being that this mantra, this, zealous religious almost belief that, oh my God, you cannot deliver housing without the private developers and without investor funds or, a heavy reliance on them or them being the major providers. And we're still in that. Harris is still in it.
Oh, yeah. And I think we'll remain so. So, I don't think they're going to leap on the idea of building houses in state-run factories, even though they should. But I do believe that it could be a central plank with others out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, what you were saying there about the community housing, there is growing interest in that. And I think the interesting thing is that the whole notion of housing as an investment, and I've you know, hear it all the time, particularly from, you know, younger generations. And again, they're becoming middle-aged generations as well. People in their 20s, people in their 30s, who are completely locked out of an affordable home. You know, 60% of 25 to 29-year-olds stuck living at home, stuck living in their parents, you know, home. And you just go, like, what future? They don't see it as an investment asset. And I think there's a real potential, and speaking to people, we had a public meeting on it down in Trim, and people were talking about it as well, about, you know, just the need for to build home, to build communities, what you always talked about as well, and to invest in the ancillary services as well, be they community facilities and nature, green spaces properly designed and integrated. But ultimately, it's about homes, and that I think there's a major value shift has already gone on in Ireland around housing. I think the majority of people don't. And we've seen actually that in opinion polls, even the Irish Independent showed the majority of people supported a fall in house prices. Yeah. That the majority of people now understand it has to be the state. You can't rely on the market. But it's how we get policy then to follow that, I think, is the question.
Yeah. And I think people are beginning to realise as well that it is down to policy and government policy, and that at the end of the day is what is responsible for the to a large degree for the rising costs in Ireland, for the inflation. And I know I made this comparison to you before, but last year, say around, I think in the middle of the year, we were looking at potentially helping it with a scheme up in Northern Ireland, and I was speaking to a housing association up there, and when we were building for 360,000, and we couldn't get it out any cheaper than 360,000 in Ballymun, they were selling for 170,000 in Northern Ireland. Now that's pounds, okay, and there's no VAT, okay, so there's a little bit to be added on, but still there was a huge discrepancy. On the same island, you know. So the policies of depending on large private operators, whether they're institutions or large private developers, and creating that expectations amongst the shareholders and amongst the owners, that adds to inflation hugely. And it's a very hard one to quantify, but for me, it is definitely there, and it's definitely a huge part. And that needs to be recognised, that state policy is responsible for the high cost of housing in Ireland.
Yeah.
And that can be reversed. I believe that can be reversed.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Agree completely with you, Hugh. Listen, Hugh, it's always great to chat. And thanks. There's some really great ideas there, and ones that I'm delighted that you're supporting now at last, particularly my proposal around fast build factory housing, state
absolutely.
Development.
Absolutely.
I'll send you on the report, Hugh, from last year, a national build.
I actually have it. I was looking at it the other day. I actually have it, so I'm sure it's all there in black and
white. You'll Google, or not Google, but scroll back. There's a specific section that myself and Phil wrote on developing fast build factories by the state, and I think it's an absolutely great idea. And as I said, Rob Cass as well was promoting it for quite a long time.
That's right.
As well. And there's others who see it as well, and there is. You know, there's a number of factories building fast built housing in Ireland already, but we do need it ramped up. And I think it is a core idea, and it could, as you say, bring employment to the regions as well, as a core part. You're talking about Connemara and the West and places like that in the southeast.
Waterford and Kerry and any place that you have a Gael, Uddaross could easily set up one of these.
Brilliant. Listen, Hugh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I know our listeners will get so much out of that, and really appreciate you taking the time, Hugh. Brendan from the Cúlann Co-Housing Alliance.
Thanks very much. And thanks, Tony.
There's just so much in it, some great ideas. And just an update in terms of a couple of events coming up. There is the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign is having another demonstration Saturday, 20th of April, 1 p.m. Garden of Remembrance. Hope you can make that really, really important. And they're also organising Palestinian political prisoners in a time of genocide, child prisoners, internment, torture, hunger strikes, death. They have to mark Palestinian Prisoners Day. Tala Nasir, who is part of the Palestinian Prisoner Rights Association, and they're doing a tour of Ireland starting Monday the 15th in Galway, Tuesday 16th in Limerick, Wednesday 17th April, Thursday 18th in Dundalk, and Friday the 19th of April in Mullingar. Also, Bose, as we mentioned, the last day of organised May 15th, that's the match between Bose women's team and Palestinian, the Palestine national women's team. Please, if you can get tickets, go over to Bohemians on that. And also, I, as part of my ongoing campaign, have a public meeting coming up in Carrick and Shannon. Delighted to be going down there with Lola Gonzalez, the local election candidate, solving the housing crisis in a fair Ireland. That's 7:30 Monday the 15th of April in St. George's Heritage and Visitor Centre, Carrick and Shannon. And I will also be going to the Maynooth Students' Union hustings, which is going to be great fun. That's the 16th at 4 o'clock in Maynooth. And then we're going down to Drogheda, to derelict Drogheda, on the 25th. I'll give you more details of that in an upcoming podcast. That's the 25th of April in Drogheda. Looking forward to doing the Derelict Drogheda tour and speaking at a public meeting down there on dereliction with DP Development. Really looking forward to that. And listen, thank you everyone for all your support and feedback and messages. There was great feedback on the last podcast. Myself and Pony. Who's Pony? Pony Tony.
My little Tony.
My little Tony. There we go. That's it. My little Tony. You can get all your little doll sets of My Little Tony whenever you want. Just
patreon.com/tortoiseshack.
We do you know what? There is merch. Come on, Tony. My Little Tony. It will fly out. But yeah, you'll have to make them sustainable of wood though. They need to be wooden dolls in paper bags, okay? Yeah. So my little Tony, and they can then be used also for all your weekly voodoo sessions and all sorts. So listen.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Come on. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. Talk to you soon.